Our presentation today is Active Hope, A Post-Election Journey by Mary Sue Roydeboek, and Robin Proud will introduce Mary Sue.
As a member of the search committee, I have the honor to introduce Mary Sue Roydeboek. Mary Sue has a Bachelor of Science in Education Communication and a Master of Arts in Pastoral Theology. She has served as a director and head of Montessori schools in Janesville and Rockford, and as the director of religious education at the UU Church of Maquonago. She has created and delivered classes and workshops for diverse groups of children, youth, and adults, and worked with multiple organizations to promote just and inclusive communities. She has extensive experience in pastoral care with people of all ages and diverse backgrounds. When the search committee set up the schedule for interviews and introduction of our candidate, we didn't know that this would be an especially apt moment for us to experience the connection that a professional leader can help us develop. So please welcome Mary Sue.
Thank you. Somehow, it has gotten into our minds and in our culture that hope is some kind of lofty sentiment, perhaps a Pollyanna attitude that is untethered to reality. No, I suggest hope is deeply connected to reality, to the courage to face it and the love to live it. Hope has grit. True hope is active. It enters and lives with us in the messiness of life. This week, the presidential campaigns concluded. In a nation deeply polarized, the results shocked many, leaving people fearful for their safety and questioning their acceptance in a country they call home. Many now find themselves doubting the trust they have in a constitution that should protect them. There is a heavy grief that has permeated this time, in this election season and long before. That has left many feeling chronically disillusioned and despaired about our nation and beyond. As we orientate away from election possibilities and adjust to the reality of the next 4 years, many in our UU communities look to what we believe and work towards, like the inherent goodness in every person, justice, compassion, and inclusion. And we ask, how do we uphold these principles and values when the next administration's vision seems so far from our deepest beliefs? Many are angry, grieving, and not seeing a horizon of hope. A friend said to me, "Not this again. I'm tired. I long for a safe place, a sanctuary. I need hope, and I just don't see a way forward." Anger, exhaustion, and grief are real and must be felt, expressed, and become part of our new fabric. These can become the catalysts for active hope. In Rebecca Solnit's book, Not Too Late, Changing the Climate Story from Despair to Possibility, she states, "Hope is not a lottery ticket you can sit on the sofa and clutch feeling lucky. It's an axe you use to break down doors in an emergency. And an emergency can bring about terrible loss or magnificent transformation, and while it's unfolding, the outcome can be impossible to foresee. Hope is active." Emily Dickinson wrote, "Hope is a thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all." Well, I love music. I like that thought. I love birds. But does it really feel like a sweet little bird with feathers? I offer another, a little more raw, deeply personal perspective from the poet Caitlin Seda. Caitlin's poem is titled, "Hope is not a bird, Emily. It's a sewer rat." Hope is not the thing with feathers that comes home to roost when you need it most. Hope is an ugly thing with teeth and claws and patchy fur that's seen some stuff. It's what thrives in the discards and survives in the ugliest parts of our world, able to find a way to go on. Hope can be painful and messy. The late Joseph Campbell writes in his book, The Power of Myth, people forget facts, but they remember stories. Personally, I have found it is our stories that bridge humanity because there is always a little piece of my story that resonates with yours. So please indulge me as I share a few personal stories of hope lived through my heroes and a few humble moments of my own. In 2016, several of us in the Whitewater community were devastated by the election outcome and deeply concerned for the large Hispanic population working and living in Whitewater. There seemed to be a growing division between our community and misinformation about these families. Not only had they invigorated our local economy by providing Mexican grocery stores and restaurants, they were providing much needed labor. For example, there are several egg farms in the Whitewater area. Believe me, there are not many, if any, locals or college students knocking down the doors to take these jobs. However, we had hardworking neighbors from across the border who welcomed the opportunity in the hopes they could provide a better life for their families. A few of us got together and decided we needed to form a group that worked on uniting lives in Whitewater, providing a common ground and a place where neighbors could help neighbors beyond political convictions. After much discussion, we chose to call our group WOOL, Whitewater Unites Lives. We sent out an email, and within hours, there were many interested and concerned people. We helped organize volunteers who provided rides for undocumented neighbors and needed to get to work or their children to school. Another outcome was the creation of a lunch program we titled Mind the Gap. This project fed still feeds approximately 150 children per summer when school is not in session. WOOL is now affiliated with our Pride and Immigrant Support Coalition groups. We knew the community was making headway. One of the prominent businessmen in Whitewater added the pride flag to his display of several flags. His circle and our circle was widening. Hope can build bridges. Engaging with the impact and expansive power of hope has been a constant companion throughout my life, especially as expressed through my father. As long as I can remember, my dad was my hero. He was so good at loving and living. He never knew a stranger and was generous in every way imaginable. He had a skip in his step and joy exuded from him. He was not joyful because his life was either easy, rather because he lived with a spirit of gratitude. His joy and laughter was contagious. He is the father of six children and many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and I am not exaggerating when I tell you each of us knew that everyone and anyone we befriended and brought home were immediately in his circle and he would feed you. All were welcome at his table, and he loved it. He had a way of making everyone feel like they belonged. In his retirement, he and my stepmom, our beloved Grandma Carol, moved to California. He and Carol became involved in prison ministry and were deeply concerned about the quality of life and work conditions for the migrant workers. St. Francis of Assisi was my dad's hero, and none who knew him would argue he took that following seriously. 3 years ago, my dad was carrying groceries into his home, and his foot got caught on a step. He fell backwards and suffered a traumatic brain injury. He died within a week. Nothing can prepare us for that kind of grief and pain. And that pain was felt deeply by all of our family and his community that stretched far and wide. At his funeral, people were pouring into this beautiful little church, many I did not know. One of the people I met was a police officer. I asked him how he knew my dad. He smiled and said, "Oh, your dad helped me become a better person." I was intrigued, but honestly, I was not surprised. I asked him how, and he did not hesitate to share through his words. "Your dad often went into the fields to feed the workers without permission. One day, the owner of the farm called the police and was very angry because your dad and a few of his followers were interrupting work and trespassing. I was on duty that morning and responded to the call. When I arrived at the farm, I saw this man and a woman and a few others with pans of egg sandwiches handing them out to the migrant workers. I approached him as respectfully as I could and told him he needed to leave as he was trespassing. Your dad looked at me with his kind yet penetrating blue eyes and said, 'What's your name?' I was a bit taken back and flustered, but I told him, and he quickly said, 'Did you have breakfast before work this morning?' I was caught off guard for a moment and then immediately defended myself, saying, listen, sir, I go to church, I'm a Christian, so I understand.' But before I could finish, your dad said to me, 'Good, glad to hear you believe in feeding your neighbor.' He handed me the pan of food and directed me to the next four rows of workers to feed. Now, for me, I started to laugh, and I asked him, 'What did you do?' He said, 'Oh, I took the pan and did what I was told.'" Now, I had mercy on this guy because I had looked into those kind, powerful, and blue eyes so many times in my life. They were filled with love, and make no mistake, he was a guy who showed up, and he called you to do the same. The officer went on, "Since then, I cannot pass those fields without thinking about him and wondering if these folks are doing okay, if they have eaten. My wife and I have been talking to the St. Vincent de Paul Society, and we're not even Catholic, but your dad instructed us to do it, and I'm doing it." He looked at me and said, "You had a good dad. He was a strong force and a great man." My dad was not perfect, and he would have been the first to admit it. However, he lived and loved by entering lives, both the joy and the sorrow. He would stand right beside you and become part of what the late John Lewis would have called good trouble. My final story for today is one I held close to my heart and returned to when I began to lose faith in humanity. It was in February of 2019, and one of the teachers introduced me to his friend who had just returned from Uganda. He said, "Hey, Mary Sue, you need to meet my friend Kayla. She's kind of quiet, but don't let that stop you. She has an amazing story." I smiled. As he knew me well, not only was I far from being shy, I loved hearing people's stories. Always will. So I introduced myself to Kayla. We found a few chairs, two cups of tea, and through our conversation, I heard Kayla Billington's amazing story, one I will never forget. Kayla, at that time, was a 25-year-old nurse, an extraordinary individual who became my friend, my hero, and forever changed my life. I share with you now a little of her inspiring story through her words. In 2016, after college, I decided I wanted to be a traveling nurse and to volunteer at a children's hospital in Uganda. During my time there, I met Patrick, a 2.5-year-old boy I called Patty. I could see he was not doing well, and tests confirmed he had a rare condition with 4 heart defects. The doctors gave no hope for corrective surgery because in Uganda, they don't do those kind of heart repairs. I was devastated. I had fallen in love with him, and to think that there was no hope, no options for him, it just couldn't be. We just had to sit and wait for him to die. It was unbearable. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. but I was determined that I would arrange the surgery Patty needed. I just didn't know how. Finally, after working out a plan for nearly 2 years, we were able to travel. There was so much bureaucracy to deal with, visa disputes at the consulate, finances, and several medical challenges. But finally, we were able to travel. Sadly, Patty's mom could not come, but she trusted me with our dear Patty. I was so grateful and honored. I brought him to a Kentucky hospital for surgery. It was a pro bono because they offered one of these surgeries a year, and Patty was the chosen candidate. However, by then his heart was too weak for the operation. I got him to Kentucky, and then Kayla became so still. And she said, the day before surgery, he died in my arms in the hotel. While holding him, I told him his death would not be for nothing, and that I would take care of his family, and I'd make sure people remembered his name and his story. I was in awe and deeply touched. There before me was this humble, compassionate, young, so young, gentle warrior. I asked her what I might be able to do to assist. Through several conversations with me and others that I was able to connect her with and beyond, but mainly through Kayla's perseverance, hard work, she started a not-for-profit titled Patty's Project. Patty's Project has now provided several heart surgeries for Uganda children. One of those operations was for Patty's sister, who also had a heart defect. She is alive and well. Doctors performed 3 other surgeries in India last year through a partnership with the not-for-profit Healing the Children in Wisconsin. She now raises between $4,000 to $10,000 per year and takes at least 2 children annually for the surgery. She has over 20 on her list. She also kept the promise to provide for Patty's family and through some fundraisers bought a plot of land in Uganda, which Patty's mother farms to support Patty's 4 siblings. Through Kayla's love, extraordinary generosity, perseverance, and her grief, hope was born. The Unitarian Universalist Reverend Frank Hall writes, "We need hope and courage to balance the suffering we experience, and we need one another to keep hope and courage alive." It's not a complicated theological proposition, but it's enough to challenge us for a lifetime. The book of Ecclesiastes says, "For him that is joined to all the living, there is hope." To feel joined to all the living is to experience hope in the deepest sense. I now leave with you a song, a gift, an invitation for respite from the folk artist Carrie Newcomer, titled Sanctuary. It is a reminder of what we might need from each other as we embrace our part of active hope in the journey ahead. Love is sustainable. Hope is renewable. Top-down power is broken, but there is another power in the world. I have seen love connect what was disconnected, heal what seemed too damaged to heal. I have seen other people and myself do courageous, even heroic things for love. Nothing truly changes without love. Nothing else really moves the dial. I imagine you have seen this too. It's a knowledge that can be trusted. So today and every day, let this be my meditation. And I invite those who would like to join me. Breathe in. Love sustains. Breathe out. Hope renews.